Welcome to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. I am Jamie Dodd. My co-host, Canucks insider Thomas Drance, who also covers the team for The Athletic, will join us momentarily here. We're back in our normal slot, noon to 2, straight through until the summer here on Canucks Talk. Canucks Talk is brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at DLEAMC.com. We are live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. And, of course, it is a Wednesday, so we will join Donnie and Dolly, or they'll join us, really, Don Taylor and Rick Dollywall from Donnie and Dolly on Check TV. They'll join us in a few minutes' time here for the crossover. Jason Buchla will join us a little bit later in the show. And Canucks season is over, right? We've all had a little bit of time now to digest that, to reflect, to look back on the season, what was, to process the loss. How disappointing was it? How appreciative of the season are you in general? But there's still lots going on, man. We've got end of season media availabilities tomorrow. Still not sure if that'll just be players or if it'll be players, coach, management, all of it in one go tomorrow. But either way, we'll have it for you live here, likely at some point during our time slot. So we've got that to look forward to. And obviously that always kind of jumpstarts off-season talk in a big way, right? Once you hear from the principals involved, once you get a little bit more insight into what some of the UFAs and other guys are thinking in terms of the players, but also obviously what management is looking forward to. And we can get into that throughout the course of the show, right? What are you most curious to hear when everyone involved with the team talks tomorrow? What are you hoping to hear? What do you want to hear? The injury issue obviously looms very large there, but of course so does this the overall perspective on the challenge to come for this team as they go into the summer coming off a very, very successful season. And, you know, as I said, look, the season is over, but you know what that means? It is off-season speculation time. Normally we've been doing this for like, I don't even want to say a month because it's right when the regular season ends, but if it's been a death march and the team hasn't even been close to making the playoffs, I mean, you start off-season speculation in February, post-trade deadline, March. So this year, I mean, we got all the way to May 22nd before we're really kicking in to off-season speculation mode, and that means we got to fit a ton of it into a condensed time frame between now and the draft and, of course, free agency on July 1st. And we'll have lots and lots of time to pour over it from every possible angle, dig into all the scenarios. What should they be doing? What do we think they will try to accomplish in the summer? But the early word from the people connected to the organization, right, the reporters here in the market, we'll speak to Rick Dollywall about this in a few minutes, the national reporters, is, in one phrase, expect the unexpected. Now, I know Elliot Friedman literally used those words on today's edition of 32 Thoughts, and we might have some time here either quickly before the crossover or more likely later on in the show to hear directly from Elliot Friedman. But his message was very much expect the unexpected when it comes to the Vancouver Canucks. This is a Jim Rutherford organization. They're not going to be stressed out. They're not going to be panicked by the fact that they have a whole bunch of key contributors who don't have deals for next year. They're going to be aggressive. Now, our own Satyar Shah from Canucks Central, the word he used on his show yesterday, ruthless. Expect the Canucks to be ruthless this summer. And, of course, that has, you know, in some ways that just is saying aggression in a different way, but it has a very specific meaning, and I think Sat is using it very advisedly when it comes to the unrestricted free agents, when it comes to the high-profile RFA in Filip Hronek, maybe even when it comes to guys who are already under contract for next year, but who maybe raise their profile a little bit, right? What does ruthless mean? It means you're not going to bend on your number for some of your high-profile, in-demand UFAs. That's what it ultimately means. And we can kind of go through the list, and I know Elliot Friedman went through the list, and it's kind of funny because he goes through all of the high-profile guys, the big UFAs, the big RFAs, and the place he kind of comes to on all of them is, yeah, they might be priced out there. They're worried they're going to be priced out there. So we're kind of looking at this in one way and saying, who are they going to keep? The answer might be like nobody or one or two. And we're now joined by my co-host, Canucks insider Thomas Drance. What's going on?
They're not going to lose everybody, Jamie.
There's a chance?
No. But they face some difficult decisions, right? And one thing that's sort of interesting about this dynamic is you saw the playoff run. Everyone in our audience saw the playoff run. They saw the atmosphere. They saw this team perform at an exceptionally high level. They saw a team that, you know, is going to go into this offseason disappointed with the outcome and also extraordinarily gratified by the work that was put in to win 50 games, to win the division, to perform in the postseason, and to perform in the postseason in a beautiful place to live that players quite like, and with a level of attention and support. Like, this is the show, right? This is the show. And it's the biggest show in the city. It's the biggest ticket. And there's a lot of players who are going to want to be a part of that. Okay. And around the league, there will be pending free agents who watch this playoff run, who watched how the Canucks play and think, I can help there. I can help there, and I can set myself up for a big payday, because it's not just players around the league watching. It's pro scouts.
Mm.
It's rival general managers. It's rival coaches, right? Like, there's probably some stuff that the Canucks did this season that you're going to see copied around the league in a major way, right? Because every coach is going to be like, how did Tocchet do it? Let's crush a ton of video. Anyway, copycat league, you're going to see some Canucks systems implemented elsewhere after this campaign. I promise you that. And I'm a little worried about it, especially with the frequency of, like, picks on the breakout. I'm a little nervous about that side of it.
You're worried about Rick Tocchet hockey taking over a little bit?
I think the Canucks threw a lot of interference on the breakout to protect the fact that they don't have a ton of mobility without their top pair on the ice. And if that gets copied around the league, yeah, that concerns me from, like, a guy who likes watching the league.
So, okay, we're going to be joined
Let me just get back to the free agent part of this. The dynamic the Canucks are contending with basically is, like, until July 5th, right, there's an element to which the club's desirability and achievements hurt them because they enhance the market value of all their pending free agents. Mm-hmm. After July 5th, when there's not as much money in the system, the Pew Suter type deals, that's where the balance of power shifts back toward Vancouver. So they're going to have to be flexible here. We'll be flexible and welcome in Donnie and Rick here.
All right, it is time for the crossover with our pals Don Taylor and Rick Dollywall. You can see them Monday to Friday, 10 to noon on Check TV on Donnie and Dolly. The crossover is brought to you by Besant Motors, powering the playoff drive, home of over 400 pre-owned vehicles, and where the players go. Fellas, it's our first post-playoff edition. How are you guys feeling?
Good. I see Thomas wearing a black hat. What are we reading into that?
He's in character.
In mourning.
Yeah, no kidding.
I'll take it off then.
Maybe put the hat back on.
He lend it to me.
Hey, if the light hits my head just right, I might blind our audience from seeing Rick's mustache. So.
Yeah. So you keeping the mustache? It's sticking around, Rick?
I love it. You should keep it around. It looks great.
I got a Friday deadline. I'm going to make the call Friday.
I just want to
deadlines make deals. There we go.
I want to lock my vote in, though. I'm team keep it. I love it.
Well, Donnie's got one, and it's really thick. And I think with mustaches, thickness is number one. And I'm not there yet. And
can see yours because
it's only been 3 weeks. I need Tom Selleck, Burt Reynolds. That's the thickness I'm looking for.
Well,
in mustaches.
Yeah, and Donnie's got a really thick one, but I'm not there yet.
Okay.
Well, I must ask you a question, Rick, to start off this crossover.
That's
jeez,
bad.
Boy, bad oh boy, guys.
Very bad, very bad.
But I'm serious. Very I want to ask you a question. We move past this season, a spectacular campaign, a dream campaign, despite the fact that it doesn't end with the Canucks in the conference final, did everything but. What priorities are you hearing are central to how this organization is thinking about it?
Well, first of all, before we get to that, Thomas, we should recognize, you know, what a great season it was, 50 wins. They won their division.
Yep.
And what I thought happened in here in the last 3 or 4 weeks is they got incredible playoff experience for that core. And they learned about, you know, the ups and downs of a game seven. You know, they went into this playoff without much playoff experience. And the only way you get playoff experience is actually playing postseason games. And they got to do that for the first time in a long time. You know, they got to game seven, round two. It was a really fun team to watch. Even in that game seven, they scored the two in the third. You know, everyone thought it was 3-0. I know we in the studio were watching. Oh, it's over after the third goal. Mm-hmm. But you never count this team out. We learned... and I keep going back to Nashville and Besser. They pulled the goalie, those two goals they score. They were down 4-1 at Edmonton, first game, come back and win. There was something about this team. They never gave up. There was a bit of just no matter how much they were down, they never gave up. And I really admire that about this. And finally, a winning team for this fan base that has suffered so much in the past 10, 11 years. You know, people rip the media, and I get it. You know, we're not everyone's cup of tea. But you have to realize it's much more fun for us when the team is winning. And it's a and you know, and Donnie talked about this. It was fun this year covering yep. this hockey team. And as opposed to year after year of not making the playoffs, and they were a gong show off the ice at times as well. And it wasn't a fun team to cover. You know, at times they were the laughing stock of the NHL in the past 10, 11 years. But this year was genuinely fun to cover, fun to watch. And from a media perspective, that's exactly what we want. You know, it was getting tiresome for us too of, you know, year after year, no playoffs. And, you know, and it just, it was so nice. And just to talk about the splendid year that it was.
Yeah, Rick Tocchet made that comment after it was all over about putting respect back in the city and the jersey.
Yes.
And I think in years past, if anybody said that, you know, not every single year, but years, but you'd laugh at it.
Yep.
Yeah, come on. And but this time there's something to it, and a lot of it has to do with the confidence I think the entire organization and the city, the fan base, has in Rick Tocchet,
yes.
who only has a year left in his contract, by the way,
mm-hmm.
and Jim Rutherford and Patrick Helvin. There seems to be a lot there, a lot of confidence. And like I say, before you speaking of having fun, you'd have fun with that comment, but.
Yep.
Yeah, there's something to that comment he made. Nobody laughed at it.
All right, are we done gazing at navels now, Rick? What are the priorities moving forward? This organization's moving forward. What are you hearing about it?
Well, hold on. The way I would frame it is, because Rick, you're 100% right about how much more fun this season was, right? For us, but for the fans, for the players, for the whole team, right?
Yeah.
But I think now that's got to add to the sense of urgency of, okay, how can we sustain this, right? Like, we don't want this to be a blip. We want to come back and make it just as fun, just as exciting for our fans and capture this feeling. And that's going to be tough to do, right? Like, I'm not saying it's impossible. This management team can pull it off, but they've got a lot of work in front of them to
Rick wants them to trade Seelofs or Demko.
No, stop. Taylor's all over me and Ryan about this goaltending situation. Hey, well, you got two good goalies.
You want to trade one of them?
No, that's what our poll question today was, Thomas. Would you trade one of the goaltenders? You know, Thomas, they don't have a first or second round pick this year. You know, and I mean, and it's not exactly a star-studded Abbotsford team with blue chip collar guys down there. Their two best blue chip prospects are Lekaramäki and the kid Wilander, and they weren't in Abbotsford this year. So, you know, and it was our poll question. But look,
it was our poll question because we brought it up yesterday and people actually bit.
Yeah.
Maybe. And we referred back to Yaroslav Halak in 2010 and the big run he had for the Canadians.
Yes,
and of course, they had Carey Price waiting in the wings. But they dealt him away, and he had played 18 great games for them. So we brought it up, and it got a whole bunch of reaction today.
Yeah.
As outrageous as it sounds.
Okay. So let me get into – you're talking about the RFAs and UFAs, Thomas?
I actually was talking more like big picture priorities. What are you hearing?
Well, obviously, I think that the UFAs are the big one. Lindholm, what do you do there? Joshua, Zadorov, Myers, Bluger. I think those are the five guys that they're going to poke around to see if they can get back. And then, you know, the rest of the guys, Ian Cole, DeSmith, Lafferty, you know, those guys. Philip Peronik's a big one for me, and I think we all know his asking price. I'm really surprised his agent would leak it out that, you know, through his media guy, that he's going to take $8 million and not a penny less. I thought that was, you know, really weird to get that out early. And now, you know, the ask is still there. I don't think the Canucks want to do anything in the $8 million range for Hronek. I think if I was the Canucks, my offer would be 6.7, 6.8, and that's it. And you might maybe, if it goes a little bit longer, go into 7, 7.1, 7.2. But I can't find anyone in the hockey world, and I've asked around a ton of people. I can't ask anyone. I can't find anyone, Thomas, that thinks Hronek is worth $8 million. And I just can't do it. Lindholm, they're going to call his agent. They're going to check it out. Joshua led the NHL playoffs, 74 hits, 8 points. His value did not go down. It went up. He is going to definitely call. His number is going to start with a 3. And anything under 3 will not be, I don't think, will be able to cut it. Myers, he's got a house in Kelowna. I think he wants to come back. The Canucks want to work with him to maybe get a short-term deal there. And Zadorov, you guys know, was the prince of the playoffs. His value went up, but did he outprice himself in Vancouver? Did he outprice himself? You know, so these are all the questions that have to be answered in the coming weeks.
Do you get the sense, because this is the sense that I have, I have a sense that there's not a ton of urgency either way with Hronek. And in fact, to characterize where they've gotten to as even negotiations might be putting the cart a little bit before the horse. This is often how it plays out with these arbitration eligible guys. Like, we see these as summer deals more often than not. Are you hearing similarly, Rick, that things may move a little bit more slowly on Hronek and in fact have been moving pretty slowly to this point?
Well, don't you think they've already talked and know what the numbers and parameters are? They could have easily struck a deal by now too. I mean, you are allowed to strike a deal. It's not like you have to wait till the 11th hour. He does have arb rights, which changes everything. But don't you think they could have struck a deal by now? Sure, they could have.
Well,
but the guy's going to have...
Like they did with Pettersson.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but Pettersson's obviously a different caliber of star, right? I mean, there's a different set of considerations there. For a player who's, you know, career...
No, I was saying maybe you want to stay away from that is what I was saying.
Oh, come on. well, let's have that conversation.
What?
Let's have that conversation. Hey, you know what? In fact, let's have that conversation.
Oh, boy.
Rick, I'll call you after Canucks talk, and we'll put our heads together and see where we can get on Hronek.
But hold on Hronek, though, like you're saying...
I'm plugging something that's going to run at the Athletic later tonight, so we'll put our heads together, Rick.
Hold on. But can they afford to wait till the summer to get a Hronek deal done, right? Like, can you afford for it to
July
1st without knowing what you're going to be spending on this guy going into next year?
Yeah.
Yes.
Boy, I wouldn't want to be in that situation.
Thomas, well, they need to know his number.
They don't. I'm telling you, they don't. And
really?
I don't think, I mean, you're going to have to budget some wiggle room for where it gets to, but you don't need the certainty as much as they did value it last year with, you know, the timing of the OEL buyout, the moment the window opened. You know, I get the sense from them that, I mean, he's at a level of player where they'll be able to walk away if the award truly gets silly and is something they can't afford. And, you know, I think there's going to have to be a little bit of budgetary uncertainty as they navigate that one.
But that's a disaster. If they walk away because they don't like the ARB award?
Of course it is.
So that to me, that's not like, we have that in our back pocket. No, that would be disastrous.
They're not going to walk away from a player of that caliber. I mean, you bite the bullet. You make a minor trade elsewhere, and you, you know, figure it out at the deadline. I mean, the point is that these ones tend to be a little bit complicated, and I get the sense that there's a willingness to wait, especially because I don't know, to be totally honest with you, Rick, that things have ever coalesced to the point where, you know, you'd say that there have been, like, firm offers and counter offers tendered both ways. I honestly think that this is a one that's still pretty nascent. In terms of the discussions between the two sides.
Okay, come on with the
just
words.
Stop with these words, Thomas.
Like, I mean, do you know who you're talking to here?
Yeah.
Have you watched our show? Like, come on.
Nascent. What's the word, nascent?
Just coming into existence and beginning to display signs of future potential. There you go.
You're looking on Google right now.
Yeah, I'm looking on Google.
But I used the word the right way. It wasn't a malaprop.
Nope. So as you sneak another
just
one
stop
in there.
Oh, right there.
Stupid words all the time, Thomas. Stop.
Oh, man.
Now that was, isn't it malapropism?
And good on Donnie. Donnie
malapropism.
Donnie called you out.
It can be either. You can say malaprop's the character of whom it is the etymology. Anyway, the the etymology.
Oh, okay. Nation.
All right, let's get this back on the rails. No more $5 words from me, okay, yes. Guys? Excuse me. Let's talk Pettersson.
Nascent.
$2. Pettersson, yes.
Let's talk
Donnie's
Pettersson.
Favorite
let's talk
subject.
$11.6 million.
Mm-hmm. Donnie, I get the sense that the club's not concerned. I get the sense that the club still believes firmly in this player. How concerned are you, given how his season ended over the last 35 games?
Well, I guess we'll find out more tomorrow, but
maybe
the question is if indeed he was hurt. Yeah, exactly. Maybe we'll find out tomorrow. Mm-hmm. But if indeed he was hurt, then why wasn't he rested at some point the way Besser was for a short amount of time? It's just, I don't know. When I watch him, I want to see a play driver. I'm sorry, at $11.6 million a year, and he has been in the past. And maybe he'll get back there. And I just brought up Brock Besser and JT Miller. There have been dips in their careers, and they've managed to rebound. You hope for the sake of the Canucks and their fans that there's a rebound with this player. But at 11.6, I just wonder about the pressure. I watch him being – that interview he gave, last week was just so uncomfortable, and how much is he enjoying himself, mm-hmm. and there's 8 years left, and I hope it all works out. I just didn't see – after that contract was signed, after the All-Star break, he just didn't seem like the same player. And I think there are members of Canuck Nation that are on their knees right now almost hoping there's some sort of injury which would explain the dip in production. And I know you've got analytics and deep stats and all that, but I'm talking goals, assists, all of that, plus minus, that it just wasn't there for Elias Pettersson after the All-Star break into the playoffs. It's just really, really concerning. Of course, I have my concerns. 8 years, 11.6 per. Who wouldn't?
Rick, what do you think about where things stand with Pettersson and the organization's feelings about it?
He loves the guy.
Nah, stop it. Donnie calls him 11-6. We don't even use his name anymore here.
Donnie was
11-6.
Tweeting about it even before Game 7 on Monday. He was getting ahead of it.
I know. It was time. It was time for him to do his thing.
The worst 89-point season in Canucks history per Donnie.
They were all before Christmas.
You can't rip a guy who got 89 points in the regular season. Come on, man.
Well, you can rip him a little bit. But I'm high on the player too. But Donnie's right. Okay. Like he fell off after the All-Star break. We can all be honest about that.
Yeah, Jamie, I get it. But here's the thing: I can't wait for tomorrow, because if the Canucks do what every other team in the NHL does and lays out their injury list. It's going to be interesting. You guys, there was more. I heard more than a handful of guys that were nowhere near 100%. I mean,
always.
Yeah, there always is. You can't go deep in the playoffs, play 82 games in the regular season, and come out of the Game 7 round 2 with 100% healthy guys. Impossible. I can't wait to see if they announce Pettersson. You don't have to announce that he has an injury, but maybe he was – not 100% in some areas. Okay, we'll wait and die. But I will always say this. You just gave a guy, a centerman, $11.6 million. Then you give him fourth-line wingers for most of the playoffs. Okay, Mikheyev, one goal last 61 games. Hoglander, one goal. Lafferty, zero goals. How do you expect a guy, why would you give an elite centerman fourth-line wingers throughout the playoffs? I don't get that.
And I think the ultimate test of, you know, people are already, we're worried about the contract and et cetera, 11.6, 8 years. If the Canucks put Elias Pettersson on the market tomorrow, teams would still be lined up to pay them to take him off their hands. Like, without any idea of this is like, you wouldn't be able to trade him. 100%. If you call Carolina, Don Waddell in Carolina, and say, hey, remember that offer you made? We want to talk about it again. They're saying, all right, let's do it. Absolutely, they are.
They might be more into it with a long-term deal locked in, to be honest with you. Right? The fact that he's locked up, it actually might make him more desirable as a trade asset because you're not looking at your own headache, arbitration, and on and on. All the stuff that makes the Hronik situation a tricky one.
I just think about the Jack Eichel acquisition, right? And I know there was an injury situation there, but how many people were lined up to bury Eichel? You can't win with him. He never did anything Buffalo, never made the playoffs, goes to Vegas, goes to a real organization, and look what he does. He's a stud for them.
Shots fired.
Buffalo hasn't made the playoffs in 15 years.
You know what, though?
And he's a stud for them, and he wins the Stanley Cup.
It's not the best comparison. You know why, Donnie? Jack Eichel's never hit 89 points in his career.
throw all the – I know you hate to do this, but throw the stats out the door. When you watch them play, who's more of a play driver? Who gets things going? More Eichel or Pettersson? It's not even close. I know you can't always forget the numbers, but I watch those two players play. I watch the way the way they approach things on and off the ice. I take Eichel any day.
Right
I think
now,
most people would.
Right now, I agree with you, but there were years in Buffalo where that was not true. Right, like I when I worked for Florida, Eichel was in the division, and every time. Mm. The head-to-head Panthers versus Sabres matchup came, Sasha Barkov left with Jack Eichel's lunch money every single time. Eichel's a different player now. He you know, certainly didn't get his lunch money stolen head-to-head against Barkov in the Stanley Cup final last year. But players, you know, they learn. They figure it out. Jack Eichel at 27, absolutely different from the player that I saw at 24, to his credit.
I hope that's the case with Pettersson. But, you know, Rick, you go on and on about his line mates. Didn't in the playoffs, didn't Hoglander get 24 goals in the regular season?
Yeah, and then what happened? He was a healthy scratch for two games in the playoffs, Donnie. He went. He had one goal, one assist in 11 games.
He wasn't
getting
any support from his center.
How do you expect him to produce with Elias Pettersson at his center? Now, I will say the thing with the injury is I don't think we're going to hear anything tomorrow that all of a sudden makes you say, oh, okay, well, that explains everything, and there was no issue with Elias Pettersson's play.
Yeah.
Like, don't get me wrong. I'm still very confident he's going to be a good player for them going forward. He was also so far below the standard he needed to be, and the thing that stands out to me is it wasn't just the playoffs, right? If it had just been the playoffs, you say, okay, he had an injury, he was battling through it, but his play fell off months ago. Maybe that's because of an injury. Maybe that's because of something physical. But it doesn't. That doesn't quite logically make sense to me with the information we have right now.
And not being rested, right? And then the other thing with going back to the playoffs, Jason Brough made this, I think the other day by mistake, I was listening to that show in the morning. And Jason Brough made the
Your
point.
Your radio was
stuck. Every morning.
You couldn't change the best station.
Always. And hey, I'm part of the group here. But he made the point that, and I agreed with it. I think he's on my side here that he looked like a rookie in the playoffs. He you know, there was a goal there and, you know, a couple of assists and all that. But that's the way he looked. And the surprising part there for me, and I know it was a different situation, is that I thought he looked darn good, solid in 2020 in the bubble in the other quasi run they had during Pettersson's time here. I thought he looked pretty good. He looked really physical. Well, and I didn't see that. I mean, there was a few reverse hits, but I just didn't see enough of that.
He's got to be a difference maker, guys, because if they lose Lindholm, you're a lot weaker up the middle, and you can't put him on the wing anymore because you need that third line guy to move up to the second position. But Lindholm, if they lose him, he's got to be a difference maker at that money, and he was not in the playoffs. He might take the high road tomorrow and say, I had no injuries. He could do that, you know.
Yep.
And he could take the high road because he doesn't, you know, he could play a good soldier and say, I had nothing. But, you know, obviously, all Canuck fans, media, everybody would like to see more of a difference maker in the playoffs.
Guys, this was fun as always. We've got so much more speculation to get into. It's fantastic. I love the playoffs, but this is great too. It's our time to shine here.
I can see in Thomas's face, Drance's face, I can tell that he disagrees with everything we've said over the last 20 minutes.
Drance loves Pettersson. We know it. No, it's just common sense. Thomas, we know.
I thought you loved Pettersson, Rick.
Loves his agent.
This is like when you tried to rip the ESPN people for taking the Oilers.
Yeah.
And you picked the Oilers.
Hey, Rick.
Yeah. No.
Rick, can 23 of 24 ESPN panelists be wrong?
Yeah.
Turns out no.
They were one.
Apparently not.
Hey, they were one period away from being wrong.
Yeah. So were you. You picked the Oilers. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah.
All right.
Jamie actually had Oilers in seven.
I had Canucks in seven.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Who had? Did any?
You had Oilers in seven. You had Oilers in seven. I'm almost positive.
Go me. Yeah.
Congratulations.
Right again.
Yeah. There you go.
Man.
There you go. All right. Thank you, guys. We'll talk next week. Have a good one.
Nice, guys.
That is Don Taylor and Rick Dhaliwal from Donnie and Dolly on Czech TV. I feel like we're more spirited in the offseason with that. That was good.
And do stay tuned. I think me and Rick are putting our heads together to write something tonight at The Athletic, what we're hearing on a variety of different offseason matters, including somewhere we might be hearing stuff that's a little bit different.
Ooh.
So
very interesting.
Stay tuned.
All right. That's exciting. And we got lots more to get into in terms of that, all of that offseason speculation. And I, you were asking Rick about the big picture priorities. And I want to try to frame that discussion a little bit in the next segment here. JanPro, the leaders in commercial cleaning and janitorial. If your workplace demands a clean environment, contact JanPro for a free, no obligation quote. Visit janpro.ca. More Canucks talk on the way here on Sportsnet 650.
Hey, it's Vic Nizar. Have your say and join me on The People's Show with big takes and even bigger bets weekdays 3 to 4 on Sportsnet 650 or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz here. We're live from the Kintec studio. 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Dunbar Lumber with three stores to serve you in Ladner on Bridge Street or Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center or Arbutus in Vancouver online at dunbarlumber.com.
So I was crossing the street to get to the studio
today,
and I'm looking at my phone because I had a busy morning, and I get honked at. I'm crossing the street. It's my right of way, but I am on my phone. And I get honked at, and I'm like, who is honking at me for like walking too slowly or like looking at my phone while crossing the street? Like, what? And I look around with just this like massive, sharp look of disgust in my face. And it's like one of my best friends driving his mom. And he's just like messing with me just to say hi.
I thought you were going to say like, it was Rick Tockett. He's a big horn guy.
And during the break, I get a text from him, just LOL at the disgust on your face. I'm glad I made his day.
Why did the Thomas Drantz cross the street?
To get to the Canucks talk.
To get to his job.
to finish a phone call and then jump on the radio.
All right. So we were talking with Donnie and Dolly there and, trying to get that sense of beyond just the specifics and the list of UFAs, although I do think that's interesting, what are the kind of, as you put it, like big picture priorities, even before we get into the specifics of what the Canucks want to accomplish this season or this offseason, I should say. And I was thinking about this morning, right? And so much of the conversation has been focused around the players already on the roster that don't have contracts that they need to make decisions on, right? We all know the list. It starts with Filip Hronek as an RFA, but then you go down to Zadorov, Joshua, Lindholm, et cetera, et cetera. And I think so much of the conversation has been framed as like anxiety about trying to keep all of those, anxiety about who they're going to lose. But from a big picture priorities perspective, I think we can all agree that the goal should not just be to stay in place in the NHL hierarchy. The goal should be to improve. The goal should be to take this dream season, to take this incredibly successful season and make the team even better, position them to have an even better chance to go deep in the playoffs next year. And when you think about it like that, to me, the UFA thing kind of loses some importance because by definition, even if you were to bring everyone back, you're not improving your team, right? Like that's literally just keeping the same team together. And I think we all agree that the team needs to get better. So we can have all the discussions about like who's priced themselves out, who can they afford to keep, who can they get on a reasonable deal, all of that. But I start to look at it and okay, Joshua, Zadorov, the size element, the physicality, 100% true. Those things are really, really nice to have. But based on what we just saw in the playoffs and in the back half of the regular season from the Canucks, those things feel a bit like luxuries to me, right? Like Dakota Joshua was in the team's top six in the playoffs, and the goal should be to improve on what he was giving you in the top six, right? From an offensive standpoint. I think those guys are luxuries. Those are nice to haves, but they have some must have items higher up the lineup. And that's where we get to what they really need to add is more top end talent, probably at forward in particular, given the scoring woes, but that's it. And if that means you're going out and making luxury or like high end spending on a Jake Guentzel, but that costs you Zadorov and Joshua, I think that's a bargain you have to be willing to strike at this point.
So, I mean, I agree. This team also needs top-end talent was like a constant refrain of mine coming into this season. They punched well above their weight, but I also think we have to note just how efficient they were converting their chances all year long, right? And then all of a sudden weren't. Games 4, 5, 6, 7 against Edmonton Oilers goaltending, right? Which shows you, right? Like, you can finish all you want in October and November, and then you're shooting against Calvin Pickard and Stuart Skinner, not exactly a murderer's row of puck stoppers in the playoffs, and you still can't expect to just shoot 14%. Like, that's not how it works at the heaviest time of year. So, finding someone who can help them generate shots and scoring chances, someone who can do more to work down low, I'd add this. You know, the Canucks outshot for the run of the playoffs, okay? So you can go right now to The Athletic. I don't know why I'm plugging The Athletic so hard today, other than that I work there.
Yeah. It's all right.
You can go read our postseason report cards for all of the defenders and the goaltender right now. And just quickly crunch some numbers. Canucks with Quinn Hughes on the ice. You know how I love my Quinn Hughes splits. I think it's enormously telling. Canucks with Quinn Hughes on the ice in this playoffs. Plus 17 on the shot counter. Okay? 6-5 goal differential. Canucks without Quinn Hughes on the ice in the playoffs. Do you want to guess how much they got outshot by?
Not really.
Try.
A lot. What was the margin with?
I'll give you a number and you bet the over or the under.
Okay.
50.5.
I'm going to take the over.
You think more than 50.5? Yeah. 60.5.
Woo!
You taking the over or the under?
Oh, I'll take the under on 60.5.
70.5. You taking the over or the under?
Oh, man. Okay, just tell me. What is it?
76.
That's a lot.
So, you know, I know you said, like, especially at forward, but it's like, also on defense. But, man, those are hard players to find, right?
And that's the thing. I think there's more viable options. Not that it would be easy, but more, like, options where you can see a straight path to doing it at forward. Right? Like, I mean, Jake Guentzel's the name that comes to mind. Like, just it's purely hypothetical. Like, ballpark figure, what do you think Guentzel's getting? AAV this summer.
8.5.
Okay. So I look at it.
Like 8.5 at least.
Let's say 9.
Sure.
Okay. I would so much rather do Jake Guentzel at 9 and a UFA forward with maybe some third line potential, but maybe more of a fourth line guy at 1 million than go 7 million on Lindholm and 3 million on Joshua. You know what I mean? Like, I would so much rather take the big, be willing to pay a premium for a true star offensive generator like Jake Guentzel. And yes, that means you're losing some spark in Dakota Joshua and you're going to have to bargain hunt to try to find it. But that's where this front office has to rely on their ability to try to find those guys, right? Their track record of finding those guys. And the more I think about it, like, I think almost how can they keep X, Y, and Z UFAs is the wrong question. Like, the right question is how can they go out and find the star talent? And then you can start thinking and dealing with, okay, how do we replace what we're getting from these UFAs? Like, to me, if it's, again, if it's a question of $7 million for Lindholm and $3 million for Joshua, or $9 million for Guentzel and $1 million for UFA bargain X at forward, like, it's an easy, easy call. You go with the $9 million for Guentzel.
All right, well, I'm going to scoot myself a little bit because I'll be writing some of this up at The Athletic, but one commonality on some of these UFAs, right? Myers, Zadorov, Dakota Joshua in particular, right? Like, that's a lot of the size that Vancouver leaned on pretty heavily in establishing what was a, like, rigid and well-defined identity over the course of this season, right? And really, the size of their defense became a key strength, especially at the heaviest time of year. And up front, you know, you get to this point where, for example, in Game 7, you've got DiGiuseppe, you've got Lafferty, you've got Mikheyev, you've got Neil Zaman. And, like, one thing those four guys have in common, aside from all being in the lineup for the Canucks in Game 7, they're kind of the same flavor. Like, non-scoring threat, not that physical, fast guys. You know, we've talked so much in the past about, like, team construction and Canucks team construction and the idea of, like, redundant pieces. Now, I'd rather have those guys be my redundant type of piece than, like, Tim Schaller and Jay Beagle, right? Like, it's an upgrade, but, you know, those guys aren't huge threats to do anything creative with the puck. They're not going to hurt you. They're defensively reliable. They can get in on the forecheck, but they're also not, like, mixing it up or bringing something else to your lineup.
Yep.
Right? In terms of, you know, mucking it up or being exerting an influence on the game in a different way. Dakota Joshua kind of stands alone as, you know, one of Vancouver's glue guys who can bring that snarl, who can bring that element. Not to mention his work on the PK. Not to mention the untapped potential. And he, so maintaining size, I'm telling you right now, is, like, whether it's with the current players or finding ways to replace that size in the lineup is going to be one of Vancouver's significant priorities this offseason.
But when push comes to shove, to me, I have no problem with that being a priority, and especially, as you said, with the identity they structured. But when push comes to shove, it has to take a backseat to the dynamic offensive
stuff. Well, and it will. And it will. I think an additional difference-making top six forward is going to be one of the major pieces that the Canucks, and probably the major piece that the Canucks are hunting this offseason. No doubt about that. That's not me speculating. It's obvious. And they, by the way, they were on that track at the deadline. Like, it's not new, right? And this is something I remember. Do you remember the deadline after they traded Tyler Motte? And everyone was like, they didn't get enough for Tyler Motte, right? And then they go into that offseason and they sign Mikheyev and Lazar and kind of do nothing to shore up the defense. And all along, you know, one thing I was sort of talking about was this management group's going to sleep at night and being kept up by the quality of their defense and the need to upgrade it. And it was like, well, where's that? That doesn't exactly match their actions. But sometimes you make the move that makes sense for you, as opposed to the move to just fill a need to fill a need.
Right. You can't force a move if it's not there.
And I think that's how they looked at it. Now, finding a top six, an additional real, like, creative scoring contributor to this forward group, whether or not that matches their actions, it's a preoccupation for the organization right now. No question.
Yep.
And it has been, I think, for a while, even when they haven't necessarily found the perfect fit. Lindholm, they were hopeful, would
help that. Yep.
And he did. I mean, he did in that he was productive throughout the postseason.
And he was, like, a no doubt about it top six guy for them. Without debate, and not someone that you're like, oh, we have him in the top six? Like,
no.
Obviously, he wasn't that. He was well above that bar.
But he didn't hit that. He was well above that bar, but he was not well above the they need another top six driver.
There's a big difference between a top six player and a star. Star caliber top six player.
Or
right?
Even just a driver.
Yeah.
Right? Like, because, you know,
like a Connor Garland, you would say, right? Is what, you know, a guy who's a driver without being a star.
Well, I was thinking more like a Hyman.
Mm.
And so now Hyman's a heavy press. Garland's sort of a different thing, obviously. But what I mean is someone who you can put into your top six who's not a glue guy, who's not a pew suitor. It's like he can do the job and he brings something to that line. But someone who can come in and elevate that line, right? So it maybe driver's not even the right sort of phrase. The idea of someone who can help your stars drive and actually create a bottom line for the territorial that control. Like, for me, Hronek would be, like, a forward version of Hronek would be a quality comparison, because we all know Hronek's not driving on the line with Quinn Hughes, but we also all know that, you know, he helps Quinn Hughes elevate.
You get more out of the pairing than when it's Quinn Hughes and Luke Shen.
Well, the way that Hughes would frame it to you, because he's framed it to me like this multiple times, is Hronek helps get me four or five additional opportunities with the puck a game. And if I get four or five additional opportunities with the puck a game every game all season long, we're going to, like, I'm going to find the play that helps us win, you know? And that's the thing. That's what, if you can find, it doesn't need to be a Mitch Marner caliber guy or a guy paid at a Mitch Marner caliber level. But if you can find a guy who can help, you know, Elias Pettersson stack heavy shifts and who can actually do damage when he's in the offensive zone, man, that's what you're looking for. Like, that's the type of thing that the Canucks need. A star, yes, that would be an ideal. But there's, you know, a level below that where you can be super productive. That's what they need. They need the, like,
I think you aim the higher high caliber. I think you aim as high guy. As possible first.
Yep.
Right. And I think that's one of the benefits of having all these UFAs is you have the cap flexibility. It'll force you to make some tough decisions elsewhere on the roster, but you can legitimately target a Jake Guentzel, right? You have the space, and the fact that you had a successful season, I think, makes it legitimate to go after a player like that, right? Right? So it's like, okay, we've laid a foundation. Now we need to take the next step, and to do that, we need a player like Jake Guentzel. But I agree with you. There's only so many guys who fit that bill. So if you don't get that, then you have to go down the list to more of the player you're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and I mean, I think that's where you're going to end up having to play anyway if you want to, because you have to make these moves, right, to upgrade the top six while actually effectively reconstructing this defense core, right? And make no mistake, you can return Myers and Zadorov, right? Or you can return Cole and Zadorov, whatever combination it goes in. You can have five of the same six guys. The fact is they're all going to be on new contracts. Like, it's still a I don't want to say rebuilding project given how loaded that phrase is in hockey, but it's still a reconstruction. It's more than a renovation when you only have Hughes, Soucy, and Juulsen signed among your NHL level contributors, right? You can't allow a hunt for a top forward to take too much away from a blue line group that performed well above their heads over the course of the season. And yet, you know, I come back to Knobloch's commentary after game 7, right? Man, he did a great job to hide some of the flaws on that roster and then correcting himself and really get the most out of guys. Right? It's like, wow. I mean, at some point, that's still something, that's still an area where this club has distance to travel.
Okay, we will take a break there. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Jason Bukala joins us next here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.